Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Program. I'm Susan Masika. When you see fruit flies hovering over a week-old banana or a heaping trash bin, you might feel more annoyed than awestruck. But not Richard Benton. The professor at the University of Lausanne Center for Integrative Genomics is fascinated by everything to do with fruit flies.
And it's this aphrodisiac effect of the fly food that is promoting male courtship.
Fruit flies may be known to most people as a nuisance, but to the scientific community, they're known as Drosophila melanogaster, one of biology's oldest model organisms. The tiny brown insects have a relatively short reproductive cycle and are easy to care for. Plus, their genetic makeup is fairly similar to that of humans. All these things make fruit flies excellent candidates for scientific study. As a result, they've become one of the best understood organisms in the animal kingdom. Swiss Info's Celia Lutterbacher paid a visit to Benton's lab to find out what makes these insects so interesting.
Richard Benton's laboratory is filled with thousands and thousands of fruit flies, but fortunately they're all neatly contained in little plastic tubes filled with fly food, a mixture of flour, sugar, and yeast.
You can take the lid off and the flies stay in. If these were flies you would find outside, if you took your lid off, within a second they'd be gone because they have this very rapid escape response. The flies, they're a little bit sluggish. They're quite happy in the food because they've been selected for many, many generations not to fly out. So you end up with the ones that are...
They're happy here.
They're happy there.
For Benton, fruit flies are ideal for studying how the brain gathers and processes sensory information, particularly smell, and translates that information into actions and behaviors. Believe it or not, understanding how these processes work in fruit flies can tell us a lot about how they work in our own brains and bodies.
So we use the fruit fly because this is a model system that's been used for over 100 years in the laboratory. So we know a lot about the biology of the fly, and we have a lot of genetic tools to manipulate the genes and the neurons of the fly. So it's a very powerful experimental system to study a very complicated problem. It's also attractive because it's of its relative simplicity. It has about a million-fold fewer neurons than our brain, but many of the principles of how the neural circuits are organized are very similar.
Benton is originally from Edinburgh, Scotland. The married father of two joined the University of Lausanne Center for Integrative Genomics 9 years ago. At 38, the fair-haired scientist appears not much older than the 14 members of his lab group. But maybe it's just the youthful enthusiasm that accompanies his descriptions of his research. I asked him what got him so interested in fruit flies in the first place.
When I was at university, I had some lectures on Drosophila development, looking at how the Drosophila embryo is organized, and that's been a very interesting system to look at, to find the genes involved in constructing animal bodies. And I just found that it was beautiful, beautiful system and beautiful pictures. And so that inspired me to start doing research on fruit flies and developmental biological questions. And that's how I got onto that track.
The first thing you notice when you walk into Benton's lab isn't fruit flies. It's actually a large glass-fronted cupboard filled with dozens of small white bottles. As it turns out, these bottles are just as key to Benton's research as the flies themselves.
And so these are all the different chemicals that we use to ask whether the fly nose responds and whether flies respond behaviorally. So, of course, you can't record odors, but you can smell them. So this is called linalool. Sort of a lemony sort of herbal, citrusy, yes. Let me see. So actually this is limonene, since it's really a lemony. Well, it's artificial lemon, because it's just one compound. But if you were smelling a real lemon, it actually would contain many dozens of different chemicals. So that's why individual components don't, give you the artificial scent.
That's like a lemon candy.
Exactly.
Benton and his colleagues also conduct genetic studies on the fruit flies, causing mutations in specific genes and then observing the impact on the fly's offspring. This is possible because it only takes about 10 to 12 days to go from one fruit fly generation to the next.
This is the mainstay of fly neurobiology, where you can mutate receptors or delete particular olfactory receptors, and we can check if the neuron no longer responds to a particular odor. And then we can ask, does the fly no longer respond behaviorally to a particular odor? We can also take a receptor from one neuron and express it in a new neuron and ask, does that receptor now make that neuron responsive to the new odor?
In another type of study, the researchers measure the electrical activity of the fly neurons involved in olfaction, aka smelling. The scientists can then convert the spikes of neural activity into audible blips of sound, which become more and more frequent whenever a certain smell activates the neuron being studied. Many of us rely on the fruit fly's keen sense of smell to lure them away from our kitchens and pantries using homemade concoctions of vinegar, dish soap, or milk. While we may be content to come up with a mixture that successfully traps the flies, Benson wants to know exactly what happens inside a fly's brain from the moment it gets a whiff of a tempting smell. His team uses a clever gadget called a fly pad to do behavioral experiments with the flies so they can determine which neurons are involved in detecting certain odors and in triggering reactions to them.
This is a device for measuring feeding behavior of flies. So it's obviously very hard to watch how flies feed, and this is a way of converting fly sips when it sips from, when it drink, takes a drink from a food, from a liquid source, and you can actually count how many times it sips. It's a device called the fly pad. It was developed not in our laboratory, but by a colleague in Portugal. But you put some food on this central little hole, and then there's a metal disc around it. And if the fly is standing on the metal disc and then contacts the food, that creates an electrical circuit, and that can be detected by all the circuit boards surrounding it. So it's a very imaginative way of detecting very tiny, hard-to-observe behaviors in a small animal, but in a very sensitive way.
The flypad room is very warm and humid, and Benton tells me that controlling all possible variables, from when the flies have last eaten to the temperature of the room, is essential when studying something as finicky as insect behavior. But once all these variables are properly controlled, the researchers can come up with some pretty fascinating results, particularly when it comes to the circuits in charge of male fly sexual behavior.
So if you put a male and a female fly together, the male fly does this very complicated sexual courtship routine to attract the female. And we had been studying one of the olfactory pathways, olfactory sensory pathways, that for a long time people would have thought were detecting pheromones that the female fly was producing, so her chemical signals. So the male fly could recognize her. And we found that these neurons actually don't detect pheromones, but rather they detect odors from food. And so we suggested that this may be an olfactory pathway that is recognizing odors in the food where flies meet, and it's this aphrodisiac effect of the fly food that is promoting male courtship. And so that may help male flies and female flies to meet and have sex together only when there's food present.
In addition to shedding light on how the brain processes smell, Benton's fruit fly research has other potential practical applications. Drosophila suzuki, also known as the cherry fruit fly, is a close relative of D. melanogaster. But D. suzuki actually comes all the way from Asia and is invasive to Europe. With a nickname like the cherry fruit fly, you can probably imagine why D. suzuki are unwelcome visitors in Switzerland. Instead of feasting on the flesh of gone-by fruits that humans don't like, as D. melanogaster does, D. suzuki will only eat unblemished, ripe fruits, like cherries and berries. They've also developed a taste for the wine grapes that grow in Swiss vineyards. D. suzuki's gourmet palate has put it at odds with Swiss farmers, who've experienced varying levels of crop damage throughout the country since the invasive insect was first spotted in Switzerland in 2011.
So most of what we do is basic research. We're interested in the basic biology of the sense of smell of fruit flies. But of course, many other insects, they use their sense of smell for finding crops or finding humans, like mosquitoes, to feed. So it's actually a pretty short step from understanding how melanogaster smell to transfer that knowledge to better understand how Drosophila suzuki can detect fresh, you know, detect their fresh fruit that they like. So there's an interesting biological question of evolution, of how does a fruit fly nose evolve so that one species like rotting fruit and another species like fresh fruit. But I think once you've identified key cues that Drosophila suzuki uses to find fresh fruit, then you can potentially identify strategies to mask its sense of smell or use these cues and put them in traps in the field so you can attract suzuki to the traps so they get taken away from the fresh fruit.
Like most scientists, Benton is eager to produce research that can be applied to real-world problems like the cherry fruit fly. But basic research, the curiosity-driven pursuit of scientific questions, is still his true passion. In 2016, Benton became the 32nd recipient of the Latsis Prize for his contribution to understanding how the fruit fly nose and brain work together to guide behavior using olfactory signals from the environment. The Latsis Prize is one of Switzerland's highest science honors, and it's awarded annually by the Swiss National Science Foundation. With the award's international prestige and prize of 100,000 Swiss francs, Benton's work has been thrust into the spotlight. But he's not taking all the credit for himself.
It's an honor for my lab. Science is a team enterprise, and we saw people working there, and they're the people who do the experiments day to day, so it's a prize that I accept on their behalf.
And now that his lab has won the Latsis Prize, I asked Benton where his research will be going from here. He says that he and his colleagues are becoming more and more interested in understanding how the sense of smell evolves in organisms over time.
So that's part of a more global question of, you look at brains of different animals and everyone is slightly different because it's adapting to the particular selection pressures of that animal. And we don't really know how, during evolution, brains have changed. How have they got bigger or got smaller or expanded one region versus another region? And so we're trying to, again, use the olfactory circuit as a place to understand how do you make new receptors to detect new chemicals? How do you make new neurons that make new circuits so the animal can respond to those chemicals?
And what else does the future hold for Benton's team? One project they're working on sounds like something out of a science fiction movie. It involves combining biology and engineering to develop a robot that can sniff out dangerous toxins in the environment.
We're interested in harnessing these natural biological sensors that have evolved in the insect nose. If we can take them out of the nose and then put them into devices where we can connect their detection ability to a particular electrical signal, then you can actually make what's called an artificial nose. So it's something we're working on. We have a Nanoterra project funded by the Swiss National Science Foundation. And the goal of the project, which is called EnviroBot, is to make an aquatic pollutant sensing robot that you could put into the lake and tune its nose to detect toxic pollutants. So we're trying to take our biological sensors, and put them into the head of the robot to make it sensitive to chemicals. I think it's quite stimulating to put together biologists and engineers. It's sort of a new frontier.
That was Latsis Prize winner Richard Benton. To read more about his work and about other scientific research happening right now in Switzerland, visit us at swissinfo.ch. This program was produced by Celia Lutterbacher. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Daniel Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika. Tune in again next week.